Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, the weekly trawl through the world's greatest pop culture, mainly television with some films and occasionally book or music, but hardly ever. I'm joined by two magnificent colleagues who work with me, Heat Magazine. I'm Boyd Hilton. Did I say that? I don't think I did. Kay Ribeiro is back.
Hi.
She's had a week off this week.
Yeah.
But you were still in last week's podcast, most of it, and then we banished you for the Stranger Things section because you hadn't seen it.
Yeah, poor me.
Yeah.
Have you righted that wrong and watched Stranger Things?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That voice you hear, who just said, have you righted that wrong and watched Stranger Things, is Steph Seelan, who has watched a lot of Stranger Things and was specially here for the Stranger Things section of last week's podcast.
Special appearance.
But I don't know why I'm going over last week's ground, but there we go.
But we're reunited and it feels
That's what I meant to say. The important thing is we're reunited. We're all here now. The A team. The only team. And this week, it's a November 7th special, Kay.
Mm-hmm.
Have you realised this? All the programmes in the second meet section, as I like to call it, of the podcast, where we review things in some depth. Some like to call it a deep dive, Steph.
It is a deep dive.
It's a deep dive, particularly into Tuesday, November the 7th.
Because, 777?
Yeah, all of these programmes start, all these big new series start that night. So there's Sick Note, which is a new dark comedy drama on Sky One at 10 o'clock, starring Nick Frost and Rupert Grint. Kay's got an expression on her face already.
Is it dark?
Well, yeah, I think it's safe to say it is. Or dark subject
comedy.
Matter.
I mean, because cancer's not funny, but in this it is.
Right, you've already...
All right, spoiler.
Spoiler alert. It deals with... Yeah, it's a comedy in which cancer plays a part, isn't it? So that's immediately edgy. How about edgy?
Yeah, I think edgy's a better expression.
Edgy. Thanks, Kay, for picking me up on that.
That's why I'm here.
Early doors. Motherland is the new actual full series based on the pilot that went out last year, written by Graham Linehan and loads of brilliant people, Sharon Horgan, Graham Linehan's wife, and Holly Walsh, and it stars loads of great people, and it's about parenthood and being a mother in this day and age. That starts on Tuesday, November the 7th on BBC Two at the same time, 10 o'clock. So you have to decide which one to watch.
Yeah. I think it's an easy choice.
She's turned it to me.
I know, you're spoiling the,
I haven't said which. That means it's not a spoiler. I don't want to have to explain this to you guys.
Okay. And the A Word, which is series two of the Peter Bowker drama about the family whose young boy has autism. And full disclosure, I hosted the screening of this a couple of weeks ago.
Of course you did. Who else was
there? First name involved. Drop of the pod.
First name drop, first of many, 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 many coming up. And that starts on Tuesday, November the 7th on BBC One at 9 o'clock. So you can watch that and then decide whether you're going to watch Sick Note or Motherland.
And then every other day you've got to be out doing something. There's no point staying in because all the good TV's on Tuesday.
Yeah, why is there nothing else on a Wednesday or Thursday or Friday even?
You'll have to ask the TV people.
I will.
Yeah, the TV schedulers.
I will. I've got their direct line.
There are some people in my 18, 19 years of Heat Magazine where I've been working on television stuff who think that I/we decide when programmes are on. So every now and then I'll get an email from someone going...
We decided this should all be on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I'll get an email from someone going, why is X Factor on the same time as Strictly? And I'll be like, well, I mean, we're just telling you it is. I didn't actually decide to put it on.
I wish you were in charge of when programmes were on.
I think he is. He secretly is. Come on.
One day I'll be in charge.
So, Boyd, why have you put these on a Tuesday?
Yeah, it's not my fault.
Because Arsenal's not playing.
It's not my fault. Before we get on to the Tuesday, November the 7th section of the podcast, I would like to find out what you two have been doing in the huge amount of time you've both had off,
from
work.
It's been outrageous.
What the hell have you been doing?
I'm going to shock you now. And do you know who's going to be even more shocked by this?
Oh, I know that. I know. Is it me?
You're going to be so shocked.
You have not read a book.
I have read a book.
Oh my God, shut the front door.
Wow.
Steph's done her reading.
Extraordinary.
Stage one. Yeah. I read Lincoln in the Bardo, which is the Man Booker Prize winner. And I specifically did it because I thought, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to show Kay. I'm going to show that Kay that I can read a book in a week. And I did.
That is phenomenal. Yeah. By the American
George Saunders. Yeah, it was really, really good. Okay, so it's a bit strange. And actually, I thought, I didn't know what it was about before I started reading it. And I'm just going to say.
Is it about Abraham Lincoln's relationship with Bridget Bardot?
No, it isn't. Oh, but
that would be good.
Yeah, that would be incredible. That would be an incredible read.
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay.
Had I known what it was about, I don't think I would have read it, but I enjoyed it. So it's about, it's kind of, Lincoln's son, Willie, dies. It's all set over one night in a graveyard, in a crypt. And then basically the bardo is like this Tibetan word for, it's like this kind of in-between place that you go when you're not quite dead, but you are you know, you're dying. Yeah.
Half Dead House.
And it's all about this one night and these...
Like in The Good Place on the Netflix.
Oh, I haven't watched The Good Place. Oh, yeah, no, I saw an advert for that. Yeah, I think it is The Good Place. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not that.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's kind of, yeah, all these ghosts and all these other people are in this place and it's quite funny, but... And this, there's like this battle for Lincoln's son's soul. It's, I'm not selling it very well, but it did win a prize. It was good. I got through it.
Your face isn't communicating good. It's like an ordeal.
That is going on the poster. I got through it, Steph Seelan. Brackets, winner of the Booker Prize.
I haven't read a book for so long. And someone else said to me, you should have just eased yourself in with a nice thriller. And I thought, well, maybe I should. But
yeah, I
felt very clever. I felt very clever because you know what? It's only available in hardback at the moment. So I thought, oh, when I was on the train, I felt smart. And I thought... Kay will be so pleased with me. And that is mostly why I read it.
That is very impressive. Yeah. Did you in between, was your whole time spent reading that or did you actually watch any stuff?
No, I also watched the brilliant Asperger's and Me with Chris Packham. Have you seen that documentary?
Yeah. Oh, I haven't, but I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Shocking fact. Mm. Did you know that Chris Packham's sister is Jenny Packham, the wedding dress designer?
No, I didn't.
Isn't that shocking?
Yeah, that is shocking.
That's not.
Although, how many people do you know called Packham? So actually, would make sense.
But that's the thing. But we didn't think about it before, did we? So
I feel like an imbecile.
I feel like a right idiot.
Didn't know about the wedding dress designer.
Yeah.
Whose wedding dress is?
Oh, she designs dress for everyone. Kate Middleton, loads of famous people.
The Packham. Trust me. Next time you need a wedding dress, if you ever do, Packham's your lady.
She really is. And it's all about his kind of. Basically, he's done this whole documentary about his. Life having Asperger's, and he was undiagnosed for years and years and years. It's very sad. He lives in a wood on his own, but it's not sad because he's not sad. Do you know what I mean?
Are you saying he lives in a wood on his own because of his Asperger's?
Yeah, that's how he's coped. That's what he says. He says, the way that I cope with not liking to deal with social interactions is I live in a wood on my own with my dog.
To be fair, it sounds like an ideal existence.
Oh, it's lovely. He lives in the New Forest. It's so nice. He's got such a great dog. He's been in a relationship with this woman for 10 years who owns a zoo on the Isle of Wight. Right. And they don't live together.
How do they they just phone each other?
They phone each other. He goes to visit the zoo, strokes the lemurs. That's not a euphemism. He actually does go and stroke lemurs.
He's living his best life, I'm saying.
He is living his best life. It's fascinating.
Have you written a book as well about this, I think, as well? Is that right? I think.
Maybe. I can only do one book podcast, boys. Yeah, yeah. I really can't.
No, he's a fascinating figure.
He is, I love Chris.
He's also a big fan of the Smiths, of course, and drops Smiths references into, you know, when they do like Springwatch and stuff.
Oh, does he?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Springwatch. Now Autumn Watch, of course.
Autumn Watch.
We can move season.
More pertinently and more topically, Autumn Watch. Is what I should have said.
Yeah.
Is that anything at night?
No. I'm going to keep going. More? And I watched a film, The House, with Amy Poehler and Will Ferrell.
Really? Now, this is... Right, before you say anything about this, let me just say that... you know, we get sent free stuff at Heat, at Magazine, the office, so...
You do, because you're very important.
Well, and we do.
Yeah, so we're very lucky,
So The House is out on DVD this week or next week, and they sent... And
they bought you a house.
They often, they've sent me a house. It's very, very generous of them. But anyway, so I've put in this position. It's funny because this morning they emailed me saying, right, we're going to send you some stuff about The House. Now, I haven't watched The House, but it's famously a terrible film. That got terrible reviews. It's got about 13% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it has. I just checked.
And so and then I immediately thought, well, now I'm in this difficult position. I haven't replied to the email because I wanted to say, well, I'm not going to Instagram or tweet about this absolutely appalling film just because you send me a thing.
You have
about
to be honest. I think you need to send that email.
Yes, but that does put you in that difficult position. I don't feel like a right old pompous twat by going, to be honest, this film is a bit beneath me. I don't really want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, that still feels like the inherent message I'm sending.
I'll do it for
out.
You. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Oh, so you liked it? Oh, there you go. I'm giving all the free stuff about The House
I
to
loved
you.
I love Amy Poehler because I'm a huge Parks and Rec fan, and obviously Will Ferrell. I mean, who doesn't love him? It's kind of, the premise is that they were sending their daughter to college, and there's like a grant that's given by their city council, but the city councilman's really naughty and he spent all the money, and they have to fund their daughter to go to college. So they basically set up an illegal casino, and it's funny. It's fine. It's just, you know what it's like. It's like Sunday afternoon. I liked it. I thought it was just fine. You know, it's not amazing, but it's definitely.
Don't backtrack
like,
now.
It's not terrible. It's totally watchable.
It did get absolutely terrible reviews. I'm saying I trust you more than the reviews.
It's getting her seal of approval.
I think. Oh, I like that. If you like Amy Poehler and Will Ferrell, it's like it's fine. It's totally
enjoyable. How many stars
would you
give it?
I mean, it's a 3-star film. It's fine. It's just fine.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So when you email back, just say, look, I thought this was just fine. Send the free stuff to me.
Send me the free
stuff.
Oh, no,
I'm accepting the free stuff now, and you're going to be doing the Instagram.
I'll do it.
Classic Voido.
I think it's
fine. Social media editor of The Unmissables.
Absolutely.
Okay, Rebecca. Is that it? Anything else?
No, I'm just going to say, right, can I just say one thing? Right, you guys reviewed when I was off.
Oh, I know what she's going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm furious. Living the ruddy bloody dream, okay?
Oh, what, are you going to...
No.
That was two episodes ago. I don't know if you could talk about it
But I did watch it. I did watch it, and I was going to come in and record, and unfortunately I couldn't. However, I just want to say... It's absolutely horrendous, and I can't believe you both liked it.
It's not.
It's awful.
It isn't.
Listeners, I urge you to discount Stephanie Seaton's opinions on this matter. She could have come in and reviewed it during the episode 2 weeks ago, but she didn't. Therefore, her opinions on this matter are not going to be accepted into the court.
I just don't think anyone wants to see... What's his name? Philip Glenister. Getting off with his wife. I just don't think anyone wants to see...
Classic Seaton.
That is so harsh.
So you've taken against it because you don't want to see two people of a certain age... Engaged in romantic... Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't want to see them grunting towards each other in
a sexy
way.
We're not going to have any ageism on this pod.
No, ageism.
After a certain age, just separate beds. Separate beds, meet each other.
Oh, both
once
in life and on TV?
Yeah, yes, please.
Well, now we know. Yeah. Now we know.
We're getting an insight.
Yeah. We've all had a valuable lesson from Stephanie Seaton. One of
That's
many.
That's what I'm here for.
One of many. Kay, have you got any more valid... expressions, opinions you'd like
Lots.
To share with us?
I'm going
to
start off first of all with Strictly. Now, have we been watching it? No. Okay. Everyone's
well, I
flatlining,
that was
yeah?
a bit silent. That was a
yeah,
big
that
silence
was a, I
there.
Know.
I
know.
I went to the Strictly studio on Saturday night.
Ooh.
Name drop part two. Yeah. To do a thing with Claudia Winkleman and for work, and didn't stay. And I felt very,
And it was Halloween.
It was Halloween.
It's the best week to go as well.
It was
Boydo.
A good week, but I did have a glimpse behind the scenes. Who's the guy with the young hunky one?
David.
Right.
From EastEnders.
He's from EastEnders, Kush. Okay. He walked past me and he's like topless and he looked like he was wearing one of those chest plate things, like
a Ninja Turtle.
But it was his actual body. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Anyway, I'm a massive Strictly fan, always obsessed with it. At the weekend, the Halloween episode, Debbie McGee was sensational. Her Charleston was incredible. She got a near perfect score. She was doing so many lifts and twists and turns. It was brilliant.
She's
absolutely brilliant,
slight though, isn't she? She can be twisted and spun around.
Yeah, but I mean, there's loads. I mean, I don't know if we could be twisted and turned like that. She's 58. I mean, if I'm as fit as she is when I'm 58, I'll be.
But isn't everyone
very
upset because she's a trained dancer?
Is
right?
she?
No, I'm not upset. I'm just.
Sounds like you're
what
upset.
What about the dude from JLS? He's a trainer.
Yeah, I mean, he's got training.
He upsets me more. He annoys me more
Listeners,
than her.
Listeners, I'm holding my hands up. I'm just saying.
First, Pip Glenister gets it. And now Debbie back with a bang.
What song did they do that to? Because it was Halloween. There's a small gaggle of Halloween-based songs. Thriller.
Yeah, and what's that
Monster
one?
Monster Mash.
I can't remember what it was.
Which one of those, like, five songs?
The Ghost Town. That's the other one,
Ghost Town, yeah. Ghostbusters. There's about, like, eight or nine, maybe.
It was one
year
of those,
year.
I'm sure. I can't actually remember. I was too like mesmerised by the dancing. So that was fantastic. I just wanted us to talk about that.
We have.
Now, second of all, you know how I was addicted to the Spanish drama.
Hold on
a minute.
That?
Is this the one that you didn't watch the first three episodes, but you told all of our listeners that they could watch it and they'd get the gist?
Yeah. So listen, it's called I Know Who You Are. Sé quién eres in Spanish, and it was brilliant. And I kept on going on about it, and I said the last episode, it ended abruptly. It was just like, it wasn't satisfying.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Do you remember?
Now it's back on, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, oh, Boyda.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, was my news, don't
worry.
That was the actual point of my my speaking, my lips moving. At Luke Custer TV, one of our loyal listeners, actually gave me the news first, Boyd.
Oh.
And he said, look, you know what? There were 16 episodes in Spain. The BBC decided to stop it after 10 and make a second series out of the remaining six. In that annoying fashion.
Well, you see, I can explain more about this because...
All right, I would like just to say thank you before you do, before you get involved again, that at Luke Custard TV was one who did tell me.
I believe the Spanish channel that commissioned it as two separate series and they shoved it together as one 16-part series. Yes, that's what the BBC is saying.
Telemundo.
I got the press release and the BBC is sticking to the original two-series design.
Of course the BBC are sticking to their story.
So, I mean,
but anyway, so...
If you want to believe Luke Custard, Luke is a very... cherished valued listener, and they have their own podcast, by the way.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Everyone should listen to that after they listen to us.
Absolutely. Podcast family sharing.
Yeah.
But yes, carry on.
Right. So anyway, he told me about that. He said I could watch them on our special BBC preview site, which is excellent. So I watched three episodes. It's continuing to be amazing. The main character, Juan Elias, is still a master.
Spanish.
Master manipulator. He's carrying on. But Eva Duran is on his case, and you know, will he get his comeuppance? I'm hoping so.
What is it? A murder mystery? I can't remember. I should remember from the first time you told us about it.
The 13th time I told you. He is a lawyer who has basically been accused of kidnapping his wife's niece. But he had an accident in between then and got amnesia. And so no one knows whether to believe him. Or has he? Exactly. So that's been going on.
Yeah, that's back on Saturday, you see. I can tell you.
Boyd, I've got this written down. Why won't you shut up?
What is your role today? Stealing Kay's thunder.
Look, this Saturday, 4th of November, episodes 1 and 2 of the second series are on.
Oh my God, you slammed your pen down. Apologies. Anyway. Carry on. So Am I allowed to carry on? Yep.
Okay.
Go on.
And the third thing I quickly want to mention is a book, Steph.
No, this was my week for books.
Sorry, I didn't even read a book. Oh. It's called The Thousand Lights Hotel by Amelia Hall. And I actually read it because it was recommended to me by our books editor. Steph's pulling a face at me because I read a book.
We're going to read one book a year. It was my book.
Sorry,
time.
I didn't know.
Okay.
Anyway, Izzy
you
Broomer.
You can each have a book, it's fine.
Oh. Izzy Broomer, books editor, had recommended it. So it was in my pile of books to read. So when I was off, I got onto it. And it's really, really good. So it's about this girl called Kit who loses her mother. And when her mum's on her deathbed, reveals the name of her father who she's never met. So she goes on this big journey of like trying to discover who he is. She goes to Elba, which is an island in Tuscany. And she goes to this amazing hotel, which he runs. And basically like shocking truths are revealed, which kind of shake her whole belief system about her mother and her father. But it's so beautifully written. And the descriptions are so vivid that you feel like you want to go there, like, and you feel like you are actually, you know, in the midst of it all, and it's just brilliant.
Let's do a book swap. You can have Lincoln and the Bardo, and I'll have that one, which I can't remember the title.
I will definitely give you this one. I'm not sure if I want to read your one.
Okie dokie. Hey, Boyd. What you been up to? What you been watching?
Well, I've been, you know...
Can I predict what you're going to say?
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm just joking.
Oh, I see. Was that get back at me for predicting? I'm just trying to help. I'm just trying to inform the listeners. I wasn't sure...
I was getting there.
...the extent to which, you know, I don't know... It's my job to know all these things. That Spanish program, what's it called again?
I know who you are.
No, in Spanish.
I'm
come
not
on.
Gonna say it.
No, we love you saying it in Spanish.
Say quién eres.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's on. It's my job to know when that's on. But apologies again for interrupting you and ruining your exclusive news.
It.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching a series of screenings of big films coming out. It's Oscar season, so this is going to be a regular slot for me. It's like Oscar watch, I'm going to call it. Because that excuses why I'm talking about films that aren't going to be out for months on end.
Okay, Boyd's Oscar watch.
So I'm going to mention three... Thank you.
Yeah.
It's got its own thing to you.
Yeah, that's
do it again.
Ding.
Thank you. Oh.
We're not laughing halfway through.
I thought the Oscar watch, ding.
Hang on. Hang on, I'm going to do it.
You do it again.
Boyd's Oscar watch, ding.
Beautiful. So there's three in this first Oscar watch, part one. I went to see The Darkest Hour on Friday.
Who's
which
in that?
Is Gary Oldman plays Winston Churchill.
Oh.
And I Instagrammed a picture of it on if you haven't seen. I mean, you can Google it as well. You don't have to look at my Instagram. It's out there.
Someone's
on the
fishing
internet.
For more followers.
I was fishing for more followers. It's on the internet out there. Gary Oldman. So he has been made up. And, you know, I met him afterwards, name drop part three as well. Very briefly. And just said hello. Hi, Gaz. And. The makeup is the greatest makeup ever seen in the history of cinema.
Better than Avatar.
Was that CGI?
Oh yeah, it was CGI.
The makeup. Let me say again.
Better than Strictly Halloween.
All right.
Yeah, I've got to say.
I don't know if Strictly is eligible for the Oscars, but put your money down now on that winning best makeup design at least, and if not him winning best actor because he's absolutely brilliant in the role as well. But this is, you know, it's like, it gets this big latex thing to make him look big-faced, Churchill-faced.
Technical terms, big-faced.
Yeah. But you know, normally when you see big latex, you know, thing, you can always tell, can't you? It's just incredible. They've made him look the spitting image of Winston Churchill. And it covers, it's not
that's
a biopic.
That's the least they can do, really, in a film about Winston Churchill, which he plays Winston Churchill.
Queen of sarcasm today.
You've asked for it today, Boyd.
Yeah. Jesus. Anyway, it focuses on, it's not a biopic of his whole life, it focuses on the period surrounding Dunkirk, in fact, in 1940. Ah. And it's almost like the other side of what happens in Dunkirk. Ooh. So Dunkirk's entirely seen from the soldier's point of view. And this is seen from the guy whose idea it was. Winston Churchill suggested that they get all the ships, all the civilian ships. And he was in the middle of a massive crisis because he'd just been made prime minister. Mm. And it was like, well, they were losing the war, basically. There were one point, there's a scene where, and it's all based on fact, where they say our entire army is going to be annihilated. Mm. And he had to try and sort out that problem. So it's incredibly thrilling film about that period, Darkest Hour. So that was amazing.
If you had to, which would you choose out of Dunkirk and this?
Dunkirk, but this is brilliant as well. But Dunkirk's like one of my favourite films, you know.
I know.
Ever.
Yeah. Top three, right? Or top five?
Top three of the year, definitely. These are all joining the top five, six films of the year now.
Top 100?
Although some of them are top 100s. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Is that the title?
Yes. Ooh. One of the great titles of the year. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is the title of a film which is all about Frances McDormand.
Oh,
yeah.
Love that
Say
woman.
No more. Fargo.
Say no more.
Say no more.
Say she, more because I don't know.
Her daughter in this film has been horrendously murdered.
Oh, God.
Oh, great.
But we don't see it. Just it's the aftermath. It's all
Why
about
is
the
it
aftermath.
Horrendously?
Well, I don't want to go into the detail because it's more than just murder. It's horrendous, perverse acts.
Oh, goodness.
Have been committed on the... You're pushing me to say more. I'm
not
going to.
Say no more.
And in desperation, she's in this small town, Ebbing, Missouri, where, you know, the police can't be bothered. The police chief, played by Woody Harrelson, doesn't really know what to do about it. And she's kind of just... Everyone's ignoring this case and there's no progress in it. So in desperation, she erects three billboards accusing the police of just not investigating this crime properly. And this kicks off this huge, like,
I
local
love that,
scandal.
Taking the matter in her own hands.
She's taking the matter in her hands, exactly. And it kicks off this huge local, all the kind of secrets and lies and seething resentments come to the fore, and it's just incredible, incredible stuff. So that was brilliant. That's definitely, she's going to be best actress. So I'm predicting now, Oldman actor, McDormand actress.
McDormand needs to win actress.
She needs to win actress. And she then finally, it. Out next week, is Paddington 2, which you may not think.
I love Paddington.
Kay loves Paddington.
Who doesn't love Paddington? But,
oh, God, I love...
But I like Paddington 1.
I think
Paddington,
he's a bit of a troublemaker.
Paddington Bear.
Take it back now.
Just say.
Well, he does end up in prison. Spoiler alert.
What? Go, troublemaker.
Yeah. Paddington ends up in prison. It's deeply disturbing, yeah. I mean, there were kids crying. I went to see it on Sunday in a screening full of small children.
And they were crying.
Yeah, because that's sad.
It's really sad. It really pushes the boat of how much they're going to put you through the trauma of what Paddington's going through. Poor Paddington, indeed.
But does he deserve it, though?
No. He's,
does he have access to marmalade sandwiches?
He does have access to marmalade sandwiches. He revolutionises, spoiler alert again, the prison diet by bringing in marmalade sandwiches.
Oh, my God, I love him so much. I love Paddington.
It is. So have you seen Paddington 1, Paddington, the film?
Yeah, and I've met Michael Bond, I didn't tell you.
The late Michael Bond.
Yeah, exactly. I met him when he was alive, obviously.
Paddington 1 was a brilliant realisation of Paddington, right? Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. This is even better. It's so brilliantly done. Every element of it is phenomenal. Like the cast. So the big villain is Hugh Grant, who plays basically takes the piss out of himself. He plays plays an old thespian who's desperate for kind of return to stardom.
Is this animated?
It's a bit animated, isn't it? Like the first one.
Paddington's animated. Paddington's a CGI bear, isn't
he? Oh, no. Boyd.
What?
I don't think he realises that Paddington's bear.
It's a bear.
It's not an actual
what do you mean he's animated?
All right, okay. It's a documentary about how a talking bear ends up in prison.
Yeah.
And revolutionised the diet with marmalade sandwiches.
Let's always be factually accurate.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, Hugh Grant is the villain of the piece, and he is absolutely brilliant as well. So he's going to be best supporting actor. Definitely.
No.
Yes. He's so bright, great in it. Yeah, he will. He'll be nominated.
He's going to be best supporting actor for Paddington Bear.
And the film itself is going to win all BAFTAs because it's a British film. Obviously, it's going to be major.
It'll win BAFTAs, but surely, what's his face from Baby Driver is going to win?
I'm not saying he'll win. I'll be nominated, as I said. I said nominated. The other two will win. McDormand and Churchill.
I don't think Hugh Grant's going to want to win.
No, just nominated.
But I don't think he's going to. If he did win, I don't think he's going to want it for Paddington Bear.
Well, why not?
You wouldn't turn it down.
I don't know.
Let's be honest. I wouldn't turn down. Like, I don't know if they gave me a paperclip or something. He'll accept an award.
He'll accept it. Anyway, he's not going to win it, but it may well be nominated. Anyway, it's going to get loads of nominations because it's so phenomenally wonderful. It's one of the most joyful experiences.
Enchanting.
In the cinema. That's a good word. Thank you. Enchanting. So yeah, that's what we've been doing, watching those. And there'll be more Oscar Watch next week, maybe.
Hold on.
If I've seen any
Boyd's
more films.
Oscar Watch. Ding.
Thanks. Should we get on to the meat? Is it meat time?
Yeah, let's have some meat.
Is it time for meat?
It's a 777 meat.
It's the Tuesday the 7th of November meat, particularly. Let's start, shall we, with... I'm reversing the order.
Wait.
It's a late reversal order. Are you ready for the A word? Should we start with the A word? Because I was thinking you might as well go chronologically.
Okay, but also, can I quickly do something? I found it in my notes and I forgot to say. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to a super pog.
Oh,
very quickly.
Did you thank that nice lady who's on maternity leave? Forgotten her name. What's our poglet?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've got a poglet
at home. Okay.
And she sent us a picture of the poglet. This poglet.
Did she?
Yeah, her poglet is so sweet. Anyway.
Okay, I need to see that.
We've got a new poglet, a super pog, sorry. And it's Tony, and I'm going to call him Tony Pantalone.
Tony Pantalone.
Yeah, I'm imagining he's Italian. Oh. Anyway, so he gave us a good review on iTunes, so it means that he's our favourite.
Yeah.
And he said that we keep him amused and entertained while he's driving slowly around the
M25. Do you know what? We are hot on the motorway.
It's a good motorway.
Let me just say, lots of people are listening to us on the motorway.
I think that's the
when
best compliment.
When they're trapped in their cars with nothing else to do.
It is the best compliment, someone who can like endure us on a long trip.
Thanks,
like
Tony.
That. Thanks.
Thank you.
And if you also would like to review us, rate and review us, you can on the iTunes.
Please do. In a good way, yeah.
Yeah, but as I always say, your review won't go through unless you press 5 stars. So that's what you have to do to get it on there.
That technical detail.
I say it every week.
IT stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, anyway.
Are you ready for the A word? Should we do the A word?
Let's do the A word.
Is the one that's on at 9 o'clock as opposed to the two that are on at 10 o'clock? I'm very chronological, you know that about me.
We do.
It's your thing.
Did you watch the first series there, by the way? Are you both virgins?
No, I love the first series.
Kay went on and on and on about the first series, the A word. Honestly, every time it was on, she'd be like, oh my God, the A word was so good last night. Yeah, she really
loves
it.
That means
I mean, she could say that herself.
That means
but
Kay
still.
Can explain all about the A word.
Yes, I would love to do that for you. Let me just get my notes.
would you like this one?
No, that's right, I've got it here. Thank you, though. So the A word is all about a family. And so this series picks up, I think it's couple of years on from the last series.
Yeah, a couple of years.
And basically there's a mum and dad who last season discovered that their son was different to the other children and he was finally diagnosed as having autism. And it was about their struggle to kind of accept that news and cope with it and how it affected their family because they also had a daughter who, you know, end up feeling kind of neglected throughout the series because obviously the focus was on Joe, the little boy who had autism, and their close-knit family around them. So the wife, whose name is Alison, played by Morven Christie, her dad, Morris, lives nearby in the village. And then his her brother, Eddie, played by, what's his name? The guy from Fresh Meat, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, Fresh
Greg
Meat.
Greg McHugh.
And
Greg
the
McHugh.
Dad is Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah. And he lives next door to them as well. So it's all about, the first series is all about the discovery and the diagnosis of Joe's autism. And this season picks up 2 years on. And it's how they're kind of still kind of coping with it. So before, Alison was really struggling with it. She couldn't cope with the fact that, you know, Joe didn't react to her in the way that an inverted commas normal son would. And but this time, actually, it's her husband, Paul, who is struggling to...
Played by Lee Ingleby,
who we love.
Friend of Heat. We love Lee Ingleby. I've met him on the tube, weirdly enough. Sorry. Really strangely. I loved him in The Five.
Did he come
while
up to you and say,
Five.
I'm a friend of Heat?
No, I went up to him and I said, we love you. You're brilliant. You're great in The Five.
Did you identify yourself as someone working for Heat or just like as a...
Yeah, but I think he thought I was lying because I went, hello.
God.
Anyway, carry on, Kay.
Steph's accosting more celebrities on the train. Yeah. Anyway, so this time around, he's struggling to accept support because they've realised that actually Joe needs to move in away from mainstream school into a specialist school that can help him and his needs. But what was brilliant about this series, and I think was brilliant about last year as well, is that it not only focuses on the autism, but also there's loads of subplots about the family members and their different struggles they're going through. So Morris is in the midst of a relationship, or was in the midst of a relationship with a music teacher.
Pookie Quesnel.
Is that the name of the woman?
Yes.
Her real name? Or
Pookie. Yeah.
Pookie.
Pookie Quesnel, yeah.
Oh, Pookie's such a good name.
Yeah.
What's her surname?
Quesnel.
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 Where does
I'm
that
not
come
sure
from?
I'm pronouncing it properly, but that's her name, yeah.
Fantastic name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Carry on.
And then the brother is divorcing the wife, you know. So it's all going on in the surroundings, but yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
But it kicks off, doesn't it, with Joe is on top of the school. He's
Joe,
sitting
who's
on the
now
roof.
Seven, yeah, played, we should say, by the absolutely brilliant Max Vento.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, who himself is only, I think, seven. Like, he's not much older than the boy, yeah, in the thing. Yeah, it opens with him on the roof of the school.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about this first episode, isn't it, is that he himself, halfway through, says, boss, what is autism? Because he's hearing that people...
He says, I'm autistic, nobody wants that. Yeah. And it's just so heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, yeah. So it's like he's realising there's something different about him to the rest of the class. Whose phone is that?
I am so sorry. That should be the ding for your boys.
That's a good ding for the Oscar watch. Yeah, but if you could leave it to Oscar Watch.
Yeah, that was just me, but I sounded digital.
You know who that is? That's Lee Ingleby. Get in touch.
Yeah, yeah.
Leave me alone. So it says, leave me alone, you crazy stalker. Lovely. Okay, bye.
So it's all about how the boy now is real. So the first series, in a way, was about them realising that he's autistic and that them finding out about the A word, and now it's him finding out, which I thought was very interesting. Clever way of starting this series. So even though Kay was witching on about series one a lot, did you resist it? You didn't watch it?
Maybe like
no, I watched it. I liked it.
What's your feeling about this new series?
I love Christopher Eccleston, and he's kind of the light relief comedy character. I mean,
he's the very down to earth.
He's very
no nonsense.
Yeah,
calls it as it is.
It starts with him going, get down off the roof. What are you doing? You got to get down. And he's just, the way he deals with everything is just, like you say, very matter of fact. Just get in, deal with it.
He's from a certain generation, right? So I mean, this whole concept of Joe having autism is very alien to him. He's like, come on, you know, he's very.
But it's really interesting how the characters have done it. So the mum now is obviously very into like the support group and everything. She's really come to terms with it. And like Kay was saying, now the dad is the one. So in the first series, the dad was like, he had this like very special bond with Joe, and it was kind of their thing. And the mum was a little bit the outsider because she was struggling. She didn't want to face what was happening to them. And now he, in this first episode, you see that he becomes kind of the outsider. And so he doesn't really know how to deal with it. But the other big thing about this episode is how the school and how everyone else is starting to deal with it. Yeah. So this very clever the way that they're dealing with something so serious, which happens to so, you know, a lot of families, and they do it in a quite funny, humorous way, but it's very sensitively done. And the boys, I mean, it's unbelievable. But also, what a great soundtrack
Whole
thing.
It's
incredible.
My theory is because I also hosted the screening of this, obviously, with Peter Buck, the writer.
Boy, too much. Okay?
And his guest of honour was a member of the Buzzcocks, who are featured in the very opening scene. Is the little boy walking along, because he has his headphones. He spends the whole time in his headphones, keeping his own world. And he plays a series of 70s and 80s new wave music. And they play the Buzzcocks in the first scene. And there was a Buzzcock in the audience, which was brilliant.
The music is another major character.
Yeah,
the
music is incredible.
In the series.
Yeah,
right?
And it's
always
has
been.
Wedding Presents, Stranglers. This is my stuff. This is my era.
That's your jam, Boyd.
Yeah. Oh, so it is incredible. And I think, for me, the brilliant thing about this series is, as you were saying, Kay, it's not just the focal point. And the shooting off point, to use a dubious phrase, is the idea of the A word and is how family deals with autism.
Yeah.
But it's a brilliant ensemble drama as well, about all kinds of different types of people and how kind of everyone, the whole family, particularly led by Christopher Eccleston's character, who is brilliantly blunt and has all the best lines in the show.
He does have the best lines.
And everyone else is kind of sarcastic. As well, all the different elements of the family.
It's not saccharine sweet.
It's very British, though. Yeah. I like that. I think everyone
British.
Deals with each other kind of by trying to be sarcastically funny to each other, and all the dialogue is brilliant.
It's very real.
It's very real. It's very witty and sharp, and it's just, and it never, even though it's unbelievable, and that makes the moving bits. So when like the kid talks about the autism, as you said, and said, you know, no one wants that, are just even more moving because it's not trying really hard to make it feel sentimental and milk emotion. It's actually quite tough. Everyone's kind of being quite tough with each other. So when those moments arrive of really brilliant, moving, emotional stuff, they're just so effective, I think. I think it's just a great series.
I really liked in this that the sister went off travelling and she's come back with a boyfriend. And it's also how you reintroduce somebody who has never met somebody with autism, how they deal with it and how she deals with her new boyfriend dealing with her little brother. And it's really, really well done.
And every single person cast in it is perfect, aren't they? I think Morven Christie is brilliant I think she's one of the best. She was in The Replacement earlier this year. She was fantastic in that with Vicky McClure.
Yeah, that was a bad last episode.
All right.
Let it go.
Fine.
And she's just so real in this, you know, and
they're all fantastic though. You think there's not a dud character?
I just think it's a great role. It's, you know, it's just a great role for her, and she completely inhabits that role. And the way she deals with it, you know, it's like, for me, the scenes between the two parents and the son, There's one scene where they're sitting on the bed talking to him about, and it's like a documentary. They're so real. The interrelations between the three of them. You're like, it's like you're watching a fly on the wall documentary about how you're dealing with a boy with autism.
How do you think it compared to? So we have had also Atypical on Netflix. Was a great American drama.
Well, I didn't like it as much as you two did. Remember, if you remember, and I think this is much better. I have to say,
because
I really
it's British.
Do. Partly, yeah. I felt that Atypical was kind of so bound up in that subject of the guy's difference and sorting it out. I think this is much better, I have to say.
You like it because all about everyone around him as well, like you say, and on the
It's such a strong...
Yeah, it is strong.
If the boy in this didn't have autism and it wasn't called the A word, it would be a great drama about a family.
That's very true.
You know.
In the
Lake District, is that where they live?
They're in the Lake District. Morris is like my favourite character, and I'm so excited because I watched the second episode, and he features heavily in it, and there's a whole big subplot coming up with him that is really, really good.
Brilliant. How many stars, Kay?
4.5 stars.
I'm going to give it 4.
I'm giving it 5.
I was umming and ahhing about that.
Good. I think it's really, really good.
Yeah,
it's good.
I don't see how it could be better, in you know, what it is, doing what it does. Hence the fifth. Oh no! Don't let me sway you.
Well, no, you're trying to sway me, and it's working. I'm going to give it 4.5 now. Get a half star for your swaying me.
Now then, shall we move on to? So that is the A word starts next Tuesday, the 7th of November, 9 o'clock on BBC One. On that very same night, at 10 o'clock on Sky One is Sick Note, which is the new. I'm calling it comedy drama. I've already said it's dark. It's edgy. Kay's already got an expression on her face, as if to say...
Oh, she has.
I don't know, it's a mixture of it's like, a dramedy. Why are we doing this? Why have you forced me to do this? I don't know, I'm getting a vibe.
I'm getting a vibe too.
So I'll set... Anna, do you want to set it up? Oh, I can set it up.
I'll set it
up. Rupert Grint and Nick Frost star in it. It's written by two very clever gentlemen called Nat Saunders and James Serafinowicz. James, who is brother of Peter Serafinowicz, the legend.
We love Peter Serafinowicz. The Tick, also on Amazon Prime.
And I did also interview Rupert Grint for this.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
The Grintmeister.
The Grintmeister, who is a lovely, lovely chap.
So boring now, Boyd.
Lovely man. So that's...
Who else have you interviewed?
Name drop 89, only of this episode. The ding is reserved for the BAFTA.
I know, but now I'm going to get a different noise for your name drops then.
He is a massive loser, isn't he? He works for an insurance company. He's lazy. His boss, played by Don Johnson.
That is so random.
Thinks everyone's useless. He's horrible. Thinks he's useless.
Is it called We Cover? Isn't it? We Cover Insurance.
We Cover Insurance. He's got a lovely girlfriend who is kind of is going to dump him because she realizes he's completely useless. He just wants to play computer games basically, rather than deal with life. Then suddenly gets diagnosed by an oncologist, Dr. Glenn, played by the great Nick Frost, that he's got cancer. And everyone immediately starts changing the way they deal with him. The girlfriend's like, I can't dump him now because he's got cancer. The boss is like, I can't sack him now because he's got cancer. Everyone's suddenly like, oh, right, we have to deal with the fact that he's got cancer. It's terrible. Then it turns out the twist is the doctor got it wrong because he is the world's most incompetent doctor. He's an absolute gigantic
doofus.
This is
a spoiler, is it not?
No, this is the premise. Okay. This is totally the premise. And the reason why I mentioned that I interviewed Rupert Grint was... Because I thought one of you might accuse me of spoiling it. I did want a name drop.
Yeah.
But also, I know it's not a spoiler because when you ask him to explain it, he explains the whole premise. It is the premise.
All right, so no one can tell us off because Grinty's done it.
You can't tell us off. Okay. All of this happens in the first, 20 minutes, pretty much.
I mean, it's only a 30-minute show, isn't it?
No, it's an hour long. It's a 45-minute show. That's good that you thought it was only 30 minutes. I mean, it's sped by, clearly. I'm saying that's a good thing. Okay. It's an hour long show.
Okay.
And with ads. And so that's our premise. And so they decide to stick to the lie, though. So him and the doctor decide to not tell everyone that he's been misdiagnosed, and they're going to carry on with people thinking that he has got cancer. That's the premise. It then spins off with a whole series of ludicrous lies and people trying to stick to this story. And it turns out that other people in his life are also lying, without spoiling anything too much. I was about to spoil something there, and I stopped myself.
Mm-hmm.
What did we think? I'm going to start with Steph, because I'm already aware that I can tell from the expression on her face that Kay has issues. Do you have issues or did you enjoy it?
I don't have issues because I'm a massive, massive Nick Frost fan.
Oh, who isn't?
I love Nick Frost and Simon Pegg and I love everything that they've ever done. So I really, really enjoyed it and I found it really funny. I love seeing Nick Frost on screen. I feel like I haven't seen him on screen for ages. And I think Rupert Grint really surprised me because obviously he's always, what's his face from Harry Potter. But I thought he...
Ron.
That's it, Ron. Ron Weasley. What is it? Weasley. That's it. I just think he really surprised me. I thought he was a very, really strong comedic actor, and everyone else in it was good. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Kate is so furious right now. She's nodding her head like she's, I don't know.
What do you think of it?
I agree. I mean, I absolutely love Nick Frost as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is a fantastic role for him because he is playing a doctor so preposterously useless. Yeah. He literally bumps into stuff.
He tries to open his car with a USB.
It's just a dream role, I think. You know, being out and out hilarious character, brilliantly embodied by Nick Frost. I also think it's really good to see Rupert Grint's kind of the straight man in the middle of it, kind of. And I thought he was very believable because there's loads of people like that, kind of like slacker type young dudes, you know, who don't really know what's good for them, aren't really making any effort in life. And I thought that was...
Could be like played by any of the people that play the in-betweeners, you know, all of those lot.
He is an in-betweeners character, you're right. And I thought his girlfriend, played by Pippa Bennett-Walker, was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She's very funny, deals with him great. So I thought the whole cast was great and bizarre and fascinating to see Don Johnson in the middle of
it. It's so bizarre.
And I just thought the whole tone of it was great, that it was... It is edgy. It's boldly dealing with this idea that people treat people differently if they get diagnosed with an illness and what the effect that has.
Kay is looking to the sky. She's looking.
I just thought it was really witty, funny. Loved every minute of it. Watched episode 2, which was also really, really good. I think it's great. I think it's a really good thing that kind of Sky's doing, that they're making this homegrown stuff that is different and is. I'm using the word edgy for the fourth time.
Why not?
And I thought it was great. Kay, what the hell is your problem with it?
I completely disagree with both of you. Like, I love Nick Frost. I think Nick Frost is the best thing about this. And he's really good. In fact, he gave me one of the maybe only chuckles I had in the whole thing when he mispronounced esophagus as asnophagus.
which sounds like a cute animal.
Yeah, like Mr. Snuffleupagus. Anyway, so he was brilliant in it. And I just thought, other than that, I mean, I put this on a par with Taskmaster.
Kay.
We're going to have to take Kay out and shoot her.
Kay, no, I'm afraid.
That would be funnier. If you shot me, that would be funnier than this.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
I really,
it's one of those things, it's like Girl Boss, where I was watching and I was like, I know I'm going to be finding this funny, but I didn't find it funny at all, right?
What was so offensive to you about it?
I just think, I don't think it's like the caliber of people in it, because obviously Nick Frost is amazing, Rupert Grint is good.
So you're saying with all these great people,
the script is, it's not funny. I think it's quite lazy. Like, I could see all of the twists coming up, except for one. There was one twist at the end. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't see that
coming.
Oh,
no, I saw that one coming.
But like everything else, if I had someone sitting, if you were sitting with me, I could go, okay, this is going to happen now, and then this is going to happen. And I just didn't think it was funny or smart enough. And I'm not angry, I'm disappointed.
I'm angry.
Also, you know Don Johnson as the boss, right? So he's this American boss who's really like offensive. He's a bit like inappropriately abusing his power. And like he's very like shouting profanities all the time. But once he's done like shouted the F-bomb, C-bomb a few times... There's nothing more he offers. It's just so one. A lot of the characters are very one-dimensional, and I just think he had nothing to offer other than that.
But you've only—that's just his introduction in the first episode, though, isn't it?
For 60 minutes. I mean, I was just judging it on 60 minutes.
You noticed it was 60.
I don't think I've heard you dislike something so
Taskmaster.
Much. We all hated Taskmaster.
I didn't hate it. No.
Don't backtrack now.
I'm not hating. I don't hate Taskmaster. I don't.
You said it was shit.
I did not say it was shit. Oh my God.
Someone paraphrased said be nice about Taskmaster.
Not at all. Yeah, no, it's just a grotesque misreading of what I said about Taskmaster.
Okay.
You
said it was not good. I was paraphrasing too. It was shit. Sorry.
You didn't like Taskmaster.
I didn't know. I didn't like it.
Don't get us to get John to play the audio now.
I can't believe we're discussing what we did and didn't. Anyway, back to this. It is. I thought the dialogue was great.
So
I thought it was funny. I thought it was.
Usually, you get behind a bit of British comedy as well.
Yeah, but key word comedy. I mean, I think the biggest flaw of this cancer comedy is that it's terminally unfunny.
I feel like you rehearsed that.
Yeah, I did.
You know,
I had a lot of time. I did. I had 60 minutes to think about what I thought about this program. I was like, this is just not funny.
I think thank God. The two of us.
I did.
You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. That's what the podcast is about.
Rupert Grint was good.
He was, he did the best he could with that role. I think. I honestly, I'm just not a fan of it. Like, I just think because they're producing such great, like, comedies at the moment or dramedies or whatever. And I just think this is just not one of them.
I'm scared to ask you how many stars you're going to give it.
Well, I'm going to give it 2.5, and the half is for added half is. I would usually give it 2, but because of Nick Frost, who I think is brilliant, it's 2.5.
But you think Nick Frost is brilliant, innit?
Oh God, yeah, he's the best thing about it. He's the Doctor character.
But his role is really funny, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
His role is written by the writers.
They just took. I don't know what they did for the rest of it.
We're not going to turn her, boy. She didn't like it. Turn,
no. It's like you're a good lady. It's not for turning, Steph. It's like living the dream for you.
Hey,
see?
Do you know what you can? Hey, you can use the time you're not watching this to watch that shockingly terrible Living the Dream. Sorry, boy. I know you like that as well.
Go on, how are you giving it, boys?
We're in agreement.
I do prefer this, though, I have to say. I think of the two, because they're both, you know, Sky One shows. But I think this one is, this one feels more bolder, more brave, and more kind of pushing the boat out. And
predictable.
I don't think it's predictable.
I think it is.
Anyway.
How many stars from you, Boyd? You just cough there. I'll tell you how many stars I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it 4. I thought it was funny. Original.
I'm going to give it 4.5. I really like it, yeah. Yeah, I just want to carry on. The thing is, unlike many a comedy or comedy drama, I really want to know what happens in the end.
So I
watch episode 2.
Out.
I really want to watch episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then it's going to be series 2 as well, which has already been filmed. Yes, with Lindsay Lohan playing Don Johnson's daughter.
Yeah. Oh, like that's going to make it better.
Just Lilo. So negative about
Car Crash.
Lindsay Lohan's a good actress.
Okay, whatever.
Not Car Crash at all.
Asnophagus.
Wow. Well,
that's the only good thing.
Asnophagus rested it for you. Rescued it for you.
Listeners, you will want to watch, honestly. Mm-hmm. Sick note. It's on Sky One, Tuesday the 7th of November at 10 o'clock. Finally, Motherland starts at this very same time on BBC Two next Tuesday the 7th of November. There was the pilot. Did you watch the pilot, Steph, when it went out last year?
Oh,
so last year the BBC did this like celebration of sitcoms.
Okay.
And they did Porridge, which is now a series still at the moment, I think. They did loads of pilots of brand new stuff.
I haven't watched that Porridge. Is it any good?
It's
I don't think
enjoyable.
You can redo Porridge.
Well, they have done.
I mean, they've done it, but that doesn't mean it's okay.
Let's not get into that. Let's not open that whole can of Porridge
Let's not do it.
You know, it's on BBC One Fridays, 9:30. So this is, this was a pilot show all about the modern world of parenthood, but specifically, as the title would suggest, motherhood, of being a mother in this day and age, having to cope with kids and, you know, the fact that the husband's off watching football in this particular example, watching Arsenal. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah.
It's written by the incredible team, let's face it, of Graham Linehan, of Count Arthur Strong, Father
Please
Ted,
don't mention... Right,
IT
just
say
Graham Linehan, Father Ted, IT Crowd. Please do not mention Count Arthur Strong, because that is the blip in an otherwise faultless career.
Count Arthur Strong's great. Graham Linehan, Sharon Horgan of Catastrophe, pulling... Legend. Helen Linehan, Graham's brilliant wife. Ooh. And Holly Walsh, who wrote Dead Boss, which was a brilliant thing with Jennifer Saunders, lots of people. And she wrote a one-off called The Other One, which went out a few weeks ago on BBC Two, which was really good as well. It may still be on iPlayer, hopefully.
What was
that
about?
It was about siblings who didn't know they were siblings. It was really clever.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it was good. And this stars Diane Morgan and Anna Maxwell Martin as the kind of two main mothers, and in fact it's focused mainly on Anna Maxwell Martin's character Julia, and she gets kind of advice, brilliant advice, from the extremely dry and sarcastic Liz, played by Diane Morgan,
my favourite,
and this lovely guy Kevin, played by Paul Reedy, who's like the kind of like a hippie-ish, what would you describe him?
Yeah,
like
he's just completely under the thumb and just a bit dweeby.
And there's the super mother, who's like the kind of A mother, isn't she? The A-list mother.
Like
Amanda,
the Mean Girls mum.
Mean Girls mum, exactly, played by Lucy Punch, who kind of like is the one who wanders. And these are all kind of like middle class. It's a middle class world. It's unashamedly depicting this
world. It's very kind of North London.
Yeah, kind of Hampstead-y.
Yeah. Highgate.
Highgate, maybe. Yeah, yeah. What did we think of Motherland?
I thought that Anna Maxwell Martin was absolutely phenomenal in this, and she was brilliant, and she made me feel very stressed, because the whole thing this episode is she has to put on a party. So it starts with her saying for her daughter Ivy that she's going to have a party, inviting people to a party in Pizza Express, and then the other mothers are shaming her. She goes, oh no, I was just going to say Pizza Express is a terrible idea and I'm having this big party at my house, and she goes to her own mother to try and get her to help, and she is denied, and then she runs around for the rest of the episode putting together this party, and then indeed having this party, and various disasters ensue, and it made me feel tense, but it also made me want to be her friend. I liked liked it a lot.
Yeah, the party thing was pretty incredible, wasn't it?
It is so good.
The main act is an animal performer, and without wanting to spoil it, that is a hilarious thing, wasn't it?
You'd never book this animal performer. I just think, do you know what I love about this? And I just attributed it to Sharon Horgan, but probably these other writers
had something to do with it.
No, because when I was watching it, I thought it was just her who'd written it. I didn't realise it was a collaboration.
Well, Graham Linehan might have been off, you know, writing some Count Arthur Strong, in which case he had nothing to do with this because this is hilarious.
No, that's a sore subject because I don't think they've commissioned any more Count Arthur Strong.
And do you know why?
Oh.
Don't be horrible about Count Arthur. Don't be nasty.
I'm not being horrible. It's the television company that hasn't commissioned it. Okay. I don't even need to say anything. Anyway, back to this.
Yes. Well, when I was watching it and I thought it was just Sharon's work, I thought what she's brilliant at is just not putting a sheen and a gloss on anything and just doing the real depiction.
She depicts so well. She's famous
depiction
for it. Yeah.
Of what motherhood's really like. Like she did with divorce, like she did with catastrophe.
Yep.
And I just love that because it is completely true, right? You get shamed into these things, but she's like, no, it's completely stressful and just any way you can, just trying to make it work. And I think that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, I get the feeling that Graham Linehan and Helen Linehan and Holly Walsh and Sharon Horgan have got together in a room. Now, first of all, the interesting thing is, I've got an instance of this. I did the moonwalk. You know the moonwalk
Sponsored walk.
The sponsored walk for charity where you walk 26 miles, which, as everyone knows, walking is harder than running a marathon.
Why is walking harder than running?
I've said this before to Kay. Kay thinks I seriously think walking.
Kay, our dear friend Kay has run the marathon twice.
And every time he brings it up, he's like, yeah, but we all know walking's harder than running. Yeah, anyway, of course it is, boy. Though.
I've walked a marathon 3 times, which surely is harder than running twice. I mean, that's undeniable.
I've done so many half marathons, it is more than one. Okay. Like,
you're running one right now.
This is a marathon for
anyway, what I was going to say was, I did the moonwalk with Helen Linehan, Holly Walsh, and Sharon Horgan. So you do it in a team of people, yeah.
Oh, God, and was it like this episode?
Well, my feeling is, because this was about a few years ago, this was 3 years ago, and I think, I haven't even checked with them, really, but I feel they must have kind of come up with the whole thing during the marathon, or like, I'm crediting with the fact that the moonwalk might have been partly responsible
for this
whole show.
Are you saying you're responsible for
this? Yeah,
the moonwalk.
Should you be on this as a co-writer?
Yeah, okay, co-creator.
Why, because they were just talking about the stresses of being a mother, yeah.
Yeah, you're talking being funny. They're all brilliantly funny throughout the whole duration, like 6 hours or whatever it was of us walking this thing, and they are all hilariously funny people. And I've got a feeling they all, after the moonwalk, sat in a room and went, what is it like? You know, what are the funny things about being a parent and bringing up kids in this kind of competitive middle class environment? And it's all there. And this is, you know, a 6-part series where every single funny, ridiculous, annoying thing about bringing up kids is in this series. And I thought it was, every scene was full of like brilliant observations about
It's
competitive
brilliant.
Parenting and the pressures
brilliantly
you have.
Observed.
Brilliantly observed.
And it will make any mother feel better.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it will, yeah.
Just watch it and know that you're not the only one who's seemingly failing, because everyone is. Yeah. And it's.
I really enjoyed the scene where she was trying to blow up balloons.
Yeah.
Where
she had how to blow up balloons.
Because it's really hard to blow up balloons.
Of course. Yeah.
And also, I enjoyed the fact that the mum wasn't like a doting grandma.
Yeah.
Was completely like, it was the antithesis
of
that.
Oh, her relationship
with
the mum is so funny.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
She's horrible to her mum. Yeah. Mum's trying to be all right.
The mum's not really supportive.
Well, the mum's not doing anything she doesn't want to do. So she's trying to get her to come off to the party at 9 a.m. and help her. She's like, no, I'm not doing that. And then she's really horrible to her. It's brutally real.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Brutally, there's no, as you said, I think, you know, it doesn't soft soap anything.
No.
It's completely the raw, honest truth. And that is so refreshing to see. And again, the cast, Diane Morgan, better known as Philomena Kunk.
Diane
of course.
Morgan.
Philomena Kunk.
Philomena Kunk from Charlie Brooker's Weekly Wipe.
Yeah,
Philomena.
Wait a minute, what's her name? Anna Maxwell
Martin.
Was she in Philomena?
In the film, maybe.
I think she was.
Oh, okay. I could look it up on the Google, but I haven't got time.
No, let's just say it's
I love her as an actress.
She's great.
She's really good.
She's great. And Lucy Punch is so perfect. It's the horrible, obnoxious.
Yeah, she delivers those killer lines,
yeah,
doesn't she?
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, she's like, should we just admit that this is a failure?
Yeah. I think this is a potential classic comedy because they're they're so well drawn, the characters, and so well cast that you can see in years to come, we will still be watching them and knowing them all so well and kind of expecting them to behave in a certain way. I thought it was so good, honestly. And the plot line about the teenage, the daughter whose birthday party she's throwing it for is ill in bed and she doesn't want to tell everyone. No. And a part of me is thinking, why doesn't she just tell everyone? And then it's like, no.
No, because she's failing again.
Yeah, she's failing again. She's maintaining the pretense. The whole thing is maintaining
the pretense. It's farcical. It's a big farce.
It's so funny. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I've been very positive this week, but, you know, let's face it, you know, there's a lot of good TV in there. I'd rather choose good things to watch than bad things.
It's kind of Fraser-esque, I think
everyone's
this, isn't
in
it?
The it's same boat.
A bit like the way that everything kind of goes a bit wrong. I like it.
Yeah. It's what good. Did you just say? Sorry. Steph was going on about Fraser.
Sorry. It's a bit Fraser-esque. It is a little bit. She's like, you know, there's all these disasters going on and she's trying to.
And the farce element. So the farcical, yeah. I have to say,
it doesn't have Kelsey Grammer in it and it's not American. But other than that, it's
about two
brothers. A classic episode of Frasier.
There's no hardly any kids in Frasier, but you know, it's very similar.
I'd say it's a polar opposite, but.
I know what you're doing.
Is there a dog in it?
I wasn't thinking of Frasier. It did throw me, because you were saying something, this Frasier comparison came up, which was so off the wall.
No, I was saying to you, I think we're all in the same boat as you, choosing to watch good things rather than bad things.
You mean it's not controversial?
I don't think it's specific to you and your discerning
taste. But
you
like it when we choose fluff. Like, I could have chosen a bit of fluff, which might have been some reality.
But you're
TV
then
bullshit.
Attributing fluff to rubbish.
Can I just say, talking of fluff, that Paul O'Grady's For the Love of Dogs is back, and we haven't mentioned that. It's back and it's great.
Steph, you could have mentioned that in the opening section, but you went
You just have.
You took, you know, you made your decision, you got to lie in it.
I did.
She's too busy making that Frasier comparison in her head, bubbling away.
Anyway,
theory.
We've got to get ready for our star rating for the new Frasier. No one else is calling it.
The British Frasier. Oh
my God. Put that on the poster, Sharon.
Motherland. Kay, how many stars are you going to give it?
4 stars.
Well, hold him back. It's 5 for me. It's got to be 5.
Much Steph. Like his counterpart, Frasier, I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Steph is collapsing in a heap due to her own ludicrous comparison with Frasier. I think I know what you mean. It's farcical.
Actually, I might give it 4.5. I've just upped it.
Yeah, I'll please up it.
Yeah, I'm going to up it. Because also it's not
sick
night.
We should like a scoreboard, shouldn't we? We're anointing the winner each week.
Well, John writes it down, see? So we have kind of got a scoreboard.
Well, there you go. I think probably off the top of my head, it's probably Motherland, isn't it? I think Motherland
is.
So. Motherland wins.
Of course.
It's not competitive, but Motherland is wonderful.
Well done, Motherland.
Mainly for being a lot like Frasier.
It is, sort of.
Let's finally, it's the tradition. It is
question time.
Thank you. And if you are listening to this on the day it comes out, which is Tuesday, it's
spooky,
Halloween.
Spooky.
It's October 31st.
Ooh.
So I thought.
We didn't even rehearse.
Yeah,
that.
I know.
It just happened.
We didn't even practice that.
I thought it would be incredibly exciting and original. Mm-hmm. To talk about horror films on Halloween.
Ooh.
Yeah. So,
again, just happens.
Yeah. And I love horror films anyway, so I thought I'd get you to choose. I know Kate does as well, particularly. She's never away
I think
from
this. I
films.
Thought it was a very thoughtful question.
Very thoughtful question. It was either that or your favourite Frasier. Favourite Frasier-esque show.
Well.
What is your favourite horrific film or television programme?
Right, I am going to say the original. Do you remember when The Blair Witch came out?
Of course. Project.
The original Blair Witch. Oh, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Blair Witch. Oh, yeah, Blair Witch Project. I thought you were saying that his original working title was Project. I was like, what?
She's actually having a breakdown. I think, I'm convinced she's having a breakdown.
It's good to see in real time. The Blair Witch Project, yeah. No, because the remake, or whatever it was, the reboot recently was just Blair Witch, wasn't it?
So that's Don't help her.
Okay,
no.
Right.
Carry on.
When the original Blair Witch Project came out, and there were people fainting in cinemas and all crying and good. That, I think, was a real moment. And I really loved that. And I would see it and I was really, really scared. And I still believe that it is a documentary and that did really happen. And you know, at the end where she stands in the corner.
Like Paddington.
A little bit like Paddington Kay's favourite documentary of the year.
Yeah.
I think that's my favourite horror thing.
Good answer. I like it. Kay?
I was going to say witnessing Steph's breakdown was the biggest horror show I've ever seen. But instead, because you know, Boyd, that I hate horror and scary things, biggest scaredy cat in the world, I'm going to choose something that isn't a film, but is Michael Jackson's Thriller video.
Oh,
yeah, because I love Jackson and I have seen that and I think it was fantastic.
Do you know, I read a thing the other day that the girl who plays his
girlfriend
in that, she didn't get paid for it. Do you get paid to do
I mean,
video?
It's payment enough to be in a Michael Jackson video. I mean, if he had asked me, I wouldn't have accepted payment. I said, no, Michael, keep your money.
Wow. I mean, wasn't it the most expensive video of all time at that point? It was expensive thing, wasn't it? It was like £7 million.
It's amazing.
Pounds or something. Yeah. In fact, they didn't even pay the poor woman.
That's
Kay's at
money.
The moment doing a Thriller dance.
I did it the other day in the car. I wasn't driving.
Someone must have done it on Strictly. Didn't they do it on Strictly Halloween?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, okay. Oh,
people are always doing it as their first song and stuff like that, aren't they, for weddings?
In fact, just.
They do
flash mob dance
moves.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We actually dressed Aston up in the JLS Boys as Thriller one time for the Heat interview.
Wow.
God, we're brilliant.
My favourite horror film of all time is Dressed to Kill, which is Brian De Palma's 1980 classic starring Andrew Dickinson and Michael Caine. And I go on about it at great length in another podcast called Evolution of Horror, which my friend Mike does, and I'm a guest on that.
Who's Mike who?
Mike Munster.
And that's such a good name for a horror podcast. Mike Munster.
Yeah. Munster.
That's what I was going to say. It's like the Munsters.
Yeah, a bit, yeah.
A bit, but not at all. Like
no,
Frasier.
I was going to say, I bet he's never heard that before, and then I thought that sounded too... sarcastic.
Well, you said it.
I've said it now. So I go on, but it is an absolutely brilliantly made, terrifying film. I saw when I was 13, originally.
Oh, how did your parents let you do that?
My dad took me to see it. We were in America. Yeah, my dad took me to see it because I think he wanted to see Andrew Dickinson naked, frankly. Yeah.
Mr. Hilton.
Yeah. And he took me to see this film, yeah. And she is naked in the opening scene. Obviously, it's a body double.
I hope you let him think that he saw her naked.
I think
naked.
At the time he probably probably just assumed
didn't
it was her. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Anyway, it's an incredible piece of filmmaking, genuinely terrifying, and quite kind of like there's a big question as to whether it's misogynistic. Is it all about the stalking of these women by this mysterious figure?
Oh, stalking's not very nice, though, is it? Anyway.
No, stalking's not good. Anyway.
So just leave Ingleby alone.
Yeah. Okay,
stop
Lee,
stalking
I'm
sorry.
I'm ever so sorry.
Then go up to him in the train.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Kay and Steph. And to you for listening.
Thank you,
No,
Boyd.
You, Boyd.
No, thank you, Boyd.
And we'll be back next week. And it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.